Hello and welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today I'm prepared to have a very positive conversation packed full of actionable takeaways. So if you're active on LinkedIn, you probably will have come across this guest's inspirational post at some point. A LinkedIn top voice and mental health advocate who is on a mission to change the way we look at our own mental health and change the corporate world by having more open and honest conversations. It's the marketing manager for Sanctus, an all-round inspirational guy. Welcome to the podcast, George Bell. How are you, George?
Hey, Jack. Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for that intro as well. I don't know if everyone would call me inspirational, but we will definitely take it. Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
No worries. We'll run with it because we see a lot of your posts on LinkedIn, and I think it's great the topic that you're talking about, and there's a lot of inspiration and motivation behind that. So the way that we always start a podcast, we'll start with you as well, George. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
Yes, my name's George. As you've already said, I work in marketing at a business called Sanctus, and we are a workplace coaching provider that basically supports businesses with the well-being, growth and development of their teams. So essentially we're helping to give employees at businesses a safe space where they can work through and work on their well-being, their mental health, the development, their performance and their growth with a professional.
Amazing. And what was it about Sanctus? How long have you been with Sanctus now?
Coming up to 5 years now, so I've definitely earned my long stripes for being a startup. Yeah,
absolutely. And what was it about that startup that you thought actually this is a challenge that I kind of want to open this door and run with it?
Yes, it's a good question, and I've had my own struggles with mental health. Basically, we're going back sort of 7 or 8 years now, but yeah, I had real kind of struggles with my own like mental health, depression, anxiety, and sort of ended up in a place of suicidal thoughts. So it got bad enough that, you know, it was a serious enough thing. But it was made worse by, I think, the way that society looked at and talked about mental health. When I needed to get support, I didn't know what kind of things I was looking for. I didn't have the language to talk about what was going on. I didn't know it was depression, anxiety, and when I did go through the NHS, it was very clinical. It was kind of, it was a lot of like pitying people with, you know, mental health issues, and the same with the charities. And it was a horrendous experience. And I also had to kind of self-diagnose myself with a lot of stuff and do a lot of my own research and figure out different therapies on my own. There wasn't really a place I could go and just get like welcoming, warm support and knowledge and information. And yeah, I didn't have that really. So I think when I got better, and I think when I did get better, I came out with this real fire in my belly of wanting to do something in the space, but do something different. And the reason Sanctus really appealed to me is the way they talked about mental health. It wasn't, I think the stat you might be familiar with, or you know, people often are, is 1 in 4 people will have a mental health issue at any one time, which obviously, you know, is an important stat, but the way Sanctus talked about it is we shouldn't just focus on that, because what that does is almost alienate the 1 in 4. We should talk about the fact that 4 in 4 people have mental health, and at any one time, some will be struggling, some will be thriving, and some will be in the middle. But let's make it kind of more inclusive. Let's open up the conversation to everyone. I think it was that approach that really, really drew me to Sanctus.
So one of the things you seem to be a big advocate for, and I think you were alluding to it a little bit then, was around having a more open conversation and people being more comfortable being open around the struggles that they're having. So having that more maybe frank, honest conversation with themselves and with others. You seem to talk about that a lot on LinkedIn. So it's a simple question, but it probably has a big, broad answer. But why do you think that's so important?
Yeah. No, it's a really good question. I think a lot of mental health issues exist and are perpetuated because of shame. Like the shame that people feel around struggling with their mental health. They've been, as I was, been taught perhaps that you have to be strong, or you have to keep your feelings bottled up, or if you're struggling with your mental health, then you're weak, quote unquote. So I think, you know, people keep these things bottled up, and they feel ashamed of themselves for feeling that way, and they don't feel like they can talk about these things. So these things then become worse when they're locked up inside us like that. The problems become bigger, and we beat ourselves up with that shame every single day. So, you know, I'm not saying that as soon as people start talking, their problems are fixed and they all go away. But these things that people experience and go through, these emotions or struggles with mental health, anything good or not so good with our emotions, they're all entirely normal, natural, biological human responses. Of course, you know, some stuff will be harder than others, but none of this stuff is weird or unnatural. It's all normal biological responses. So I think I don't know how we've managed to get to a place where people feel that they shouldn't be talking about, you know, normal everyday emotions that they might be going through and shaming themselves for that. So, you know, I think the more that we talk about these things, the more we help people to understand that the things they are experiencing are normal. Yes, they, you know, there might be some difficult emotions in there, of course, but they are normal. I think the more we can encourage people to open up, to seek support, to show people that they're not alone, essentially. And I think, you know, a lot of these things are so closely related to our entire lives. I think, you know, the way we work, for example, the way we show up to work, if we're struggling with our mental health, that is going to impact our performance and how we interact with colleagues and our purpose and our growth. So I think actually, you know, the more we encourage these conversations around people's mental health, the more we're encouraging conversations around people's lives and how they connect and their purpose and, you know, where do they want to go in life. I truly, truly believe that, you know, if we have more conversations about mental health, we'd have, you know, happier workplaces and workplaces that are more productive and more successful. Sounds like a leap, but, you know, I do really believe that's a fact.
So it sounds like it was coming a few times then that people aren't speaking out perhaps because they see it as a weakness. Is that something that you found from wearing your kind of marketeer's hat, or is that something that you found for your own evidence?
Yeah, I would definitely say it's a lot better now. So I think if I go back to when I really started with my journey with mental health issues, so yeah, I think it was about 8 years ago, it was a lot different then. I think then you really didn't talk about it. I didn't really see, you know, the kind of posts that I do on LinkedIn now. I think a lot of people are doing that stuff, right? Which is obviously great. But I think back then it was very, very rare. You had the odd celebrity that would maybe come out and talk about it. But that was kind of it. I think I have definitely seen the difference in that over the last 8 years, both personally and, you know, I think from a marketing perspective as well. I think brands and people have become more vulnerable as a marketing tactic as well. But definitely, definitely the conversation has shifted. And yet I think people, particularly men, and particularly sometimes, you know, people stereotypically in certain roles, for example, sales roles, keep things bottled up and believe that there is a weakness tied to more difficult emotions or struggles with mental health. So yeah, I think, you know, if someone reads one post from me about you should open up, it's not going to necessarily change years of like ingrained societal belief.
No, but what you're talking about, George, is just the knock-on effect, and it's like that 1% of, I know that you've kind of post regularly and you've got a strong following, so if some people are seeing it on a regular basis and all it takes is one person or 10 people to kind of make that change or speak up or whatever, and time after time, like 100 years in the future, it's going to be a totally different conversation. I think we've seen so much development in the last few years, so you are fighting the good fight.
Yeah, and I think just to jump in on that, sorry, I think also it doesn't have to be that, you know, people don't need to suddenly from tomorrow start opening up the floodgates on their mental health and go around and tell everyone exactly how they're feeling and all of these struggles, and you know, it doesn't have to be like that. But if you can just start to become more aware of your mental health and your emotions, and just kind of start dipping your toe in, and that might be that, you know, you've just had a sale falling through and it makes you feel really crap. But if you're able to just be like, do you know what, that's made me feel really crap, you're just starting to dip your toe into that mental health conversation and become more aware of your own mental health and kind of share that with others, which will then encourage other people to share it back with you.
Yeah, and I think the I don't know if you'd call it a skill or an attribute, but that self-awareness, if you can get that muscle flexing and you can apply that to different aspects of your life, then you kind of you're going to see the growth and you're going to see the success. So you alluded to it there, George. Obviously, we are a sales company. We're salespeople through and through. And this is a predominantly a sales and marketing podcast. So a lot of people that listen to it are SDRs, BDRs, sales directors, that kind of thing. I guess for people working in sales, it's one of the toughest jobs because you're facing rejection on a daily basis. But why, when it comes to mental health, why is sales predominantly one of probably the most affected areas? And what can these people be doing to kind of, I guess, proactively and reactively combat this?
Yeah, I did a stint in sales, by the way. I did a bit of time in recruitment, so I've trodden the path, and I get the struggle. I'm on the other side now on marketing, but you know, like you say, that's got its challenges. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Sales is one of the toughest jobs on the planet, and I think, you know, there are a number of reasons for that. You've alluded to one of them, rejection. So I think, you know, rejection is an incredibly tough thing to deal with. I think for a lot of people, it can be hard to separate yourself from the rejection. So when you get a rejection, you're not hearing, no, I don't want your product or service. You're hearing, no, I don't want you, or no, you're not good enough. And you've tied yourself up so much with the product and the service and the deal and the process that you're not able to separate your own emotion from it. And then, you know, you often, as a salesperson, are probably going through more rejections or more ghosting than yeses, right? Probably. I mean, maybe not always. Maybe not always. But you're going to have to deal with rejection, right? And I think it's the same feeling as if you have a breakup in a relationship, or, you know, someone you've been dating ghosts you. I think while the situation is slightly different, the feeling that comes with it, that core feeling of rejection, of feeling that you're not good enough or you weren't good enough, it's the same. And often your ability to handle these things is shaped from when you're very, very young, like through your childhood, through your teen years at school, maybe your first workplace. And so much stuff plays into this, like, you know, how much love did you feel like you got from your parents? Were you accepted at school, or were you bullied? Did you feel like an outsider? How did your first boss treat you? Were you accepted in your first workplace? All of these things kind of build up over the years, and they play into your ability to handle rejection. So you might have a salesperson now who is really, really confident, and yet they really struggle with the feeling of rejection, because actually it's triggering. They might not even realize, but it's triggering like deep-rooted trauma in them from, you know, not like feeling like they're rejected by their parents as kids. So you might have salespeople who are the most confident people in the world, and yet the role is really, really taxing on them, because it's kind of bringing out that child in them. And I think, you know, I see a lot of people say, you know, they love the rejection. I think it's rare to probably find someone who completely loves rejection, because we are, I mean, you two might tell me now that you don't agree with that, but you know, I think we are biologically hardwired to look for human connection, human belonging, acceptance, and this goes back to like prehistoric times. So a rejection kind of goes against our like natural biology, and I mean, you know, there's other stuff plays into it as well. So I think obviously with sales, you can often be reduced down to a number or target, not always, but it can be quite binary and black and white. Like you're either hitting target or you're not hitting target, and I think sort of the humanness and nuance in between that can be lost a bit. And then I think with that, you can also feel like you're only as good as your last day, you're only as good as your last sale. I think this is coming back to my recruitment time, but that's how I felt. I remember I made my first deal. I was 21, my first job out of uni. I've made my first deal, was absolutely buzzing, like ear to ear. I'd rung the bell, it was ear to ear smile. A director walked around, like 20 minutes had gone by, a director walked around and he was like, "What are you smiling about?" And I was like, "Oh, I've just made my first deal." And he was like, "Great, that's done now. Get back on the phone." And it was as quick as that. And I remember it so well, because I think there was no time to celebrate. There was no time to kind of celebrate those quick wins. And I think salespeople can impose that on themselves when they know they've got a target to hit, or there's always another sale they could have, always another email they could send, it can be hard to switch off, relax, enjoy the, you know, enjoy and celebrate the wins, but then not think about work once work is finished. So, I mean, you know, in short, there's a lot of reasons why salespeople might struggle, right?
Yeah, I think that was beautiful. We talk about this a lot, but it's like one of the big things we say is like the highs are high, the lows are low, but don't ride them for too long. It does sound like you were kind of experiencing some toxic management there, so they definitely should have given you a bit more praise for that. And I think like we talk about it all the time is, do, asking me and Zach are obviously working in sales every day, do we love the rejection? No. Like, but I think the rejection, I don't look at it as like a love or a hate. It's like the rejection is a byproduct of the job. Do you know what I mean? That and one of the big things that me and Zach spoke about before starting the business and we continue to talk about, and the advice we give is you've got to make peace with that inner child, because you said it perfectly, George. There's that six-year-old that's within you, and every time someone says no, I'm not interested, it's like, oh, they're not interested in me. Oh, that reminds me of my childhood, my friendship groups, my drama club, my parents, whatever it is. And although it might not be consciously, subconsciously we're relating it to ourselves. So what would you say for people, and you've been there, and what advice would you give to people, like how do you combat that feeling of rejection, and what actionable takeaways should you be doing?
You touched on it a bit earlier, but I think self-awareness is the first step, because I think, you know, if I go back to when I was younger and I didn't know about mental health, and as you know, as we were saying before, people weren't talking about it, I wasn't aware of it. Actually, when I was getting rejected, or I'd had a rejection, you're not self-aware enough to understand there's an inner child and how your past might have played into it. You just go, right, great, well, I'm not good enough, or I don't know what I'm doing, or I'm crap, or I should just give it up. You go straight there. So I think the first step is an acceptance of kind of what we said, that there will be things playing into how you respond to rejection that have happened to you, and you know it's not out of your control, but there is a reason why you feel the way you do. And then I think it comes into self-awareness. And I think as you know, the term self-awareness, I think, can get a little bit of stick. I think it can get dismissed as being a bit sort of fluffy. But actually, I do think it is an absolute superpower, whatever role you're in or whatever kind of area of life you're looking to work on. And I do think it's one of the most powerful tools that a salesperson can have in their arsenal. I think, at its absolute kind of basic form, self-awareness is about having a deep understanding of yourself and who you are and where you've come from, your triggers, your blind spots, the things you're good at, the things maybe you're not so good at. And it's how you can start to, once you know those things, it's how you can start to deal with feelings of rejection or imposterism or repeated knockbacks or that sale that falls through. It will help you just start to understand why you feel a certain way, how you respond, why you respond a certain way to that rejection or that way that a person has spoken to you. And it's how you can start to sort of get an understanding of yourself and get an understanding of how parts of you are playing into a certain situation, why certain emotions are coming up for you. And then obviously, you know, you can learn about your blind spots as well and your areas for improvement, because there might be things from your past that are playing into the way you feel. And also it might be something more practical, like maybe you haven't had the right sales training in this area. I think it just helps give you a more grounded view of a situation rather than just getting completely wrapped up in the emotion of it all. And I think the other thing to say that's really important is that the way you react to these situations, it's information. So it's nothing to be, and that's the other important thing with something like rejection, or like feeling rejection, or feeling imposter syndrome. It's information. These aren't necessarily negative feelings or emotions. It's your body's way of trying to protect you. Again, this is like prehistoric. This goes back to like prehistoric fight or flight times, where your body perceives a threat because of something you have experienced. So it's just your body's way of giving information, saying there's something here you should pay attention to, something you should get curious about. So if you do feel a certain way after you've been getting rejected, just pay attention to that. Just get curious about it. You don't need to beat yourself up. Just ask yourself, that's interesting. I wonder where this is coming from. And once you do start to get curious about it, you can start to work with it. Because you can work through these things, the way you handle rejection, feelings of imposterism, anything else that might come up in your role. You can work through, you can work on these things and work through these things. And eventually you can, whether that's with a qualified professional, whether that's with your manager or a team or courses or a combination, you can work through these things. I guess you can't always control it, how a sale goes. You can't always control if someone says no to you. Obviously, there are things you can do and you can objection handle, but ultimately there will be some things outside of your control, but you can control how you respond to it. Takes a bit of time, takes a bit of work, but you can get there. So I think that's really the start, and that's by no means easy. I know people aren't going to listen to this and be like, right, well, I'll just be more self-aware. It doesn't work like that. It takes time, but I think the first step is just acknowledging that and starting to build it into kind of your daily practice. And then I think from there, sort of standard stuff, but make sure you do have a routine. Make sure you do have time to exercise, eat and drink well, get enough sleep, switch off and unwind, do things that make sure you aren't thinking about work and sales and targets, have balance in your life. Balance looks different for everyone. For some people it might be a running club, for some people it's going down the pub with mates, cinema, painting, whatever it is. Find the things that you love that can help you rest, that can help you switch off, can help you connect, and balance those with your work. I think these will help you not only talk to yourself better and easier and nicer, but also it'll just help you be a more grounded salesperson anyway. And then I think finally, talk to people. If you are feeling a certain way, if rejection is making you feel a certain way, or there's another part of your role you're struggling with, talk to people. Talk to your manager, share what's going on for you. Talk to your colleagues. As we said earlier, by doing that, you'll find that you're not alone. Other people go through these things. And actually, that's a way that you can kind of, a problem shared is a problem halved. You can share these things, and then, no doubt you'll get some reassurance back and, probably some guidance or whatever it is. Talk about the parts you find hard. Talk about the things you're enjoying. But I think, it just reduces these feelings of shame, and it allows people to help you as well.
It's a great answer. I think a lot of the stuff that you're saying really resonates with me and Jack. A lot of the stuff that we teach our salespeople are trying to advise them on as well, and just some of the work that me and Jack have done as well, noticing in certain moments that's probably the little six-year-old that still lives in you that wanted his mum to give him a cuddle a bit more and just tell him everything was going to be all right. Yeah, it's amazing some of the stuff that you carry on. So some of the stuff that we found as well is, with us and with our salespeople, there's often an existing set of kind of core beliefs that tend to come out in the worst moments. So it's quite common for "I'm not good enough" to come out. And when "I'm not good enough" comes out, is usually in those moments when you're perhaps in a bit of a rut. So I suppose salespeople typically have this kind of thing where it's like a peaks and troughs type setup, right? So we've talked a lot about the rejection side of the curve. But are there any dangers with the validation side as well? So when you're on the top of the top and you think everything's going well and I've got the big deal in, what are the dangers when that happens, if any?
the reason I talked about I joined Sanctus, for example, is the way that we spoke about the spectrum. So rather than alienating a particular or focusing on a particular part of the spectrum and only working on your mental health when things are great, or sorry, when things aren't so great, it's about looking at the whole spectrum of mental health. And just as people go through peaks and troughs in sales, they will go through peaks and troughs with their mental health as well. And that could be daily. Like, you could experience euphoric highs down to some crushing lows on a weekly or daily basis. So I don't know if it's a danger as such, but I think it's important to always be aware of what's going on for you. Just as we've talked about self-awareness and noticing what's going on, don't only do that when you hit a crisis point. Do that when you feel ecstatic, when things are going well, when you're feeling, you know, joy and energy and happiness with your work. Pay attention to those things, because that is also your body giving you information about things that you enjoy and you're good at, and you know that's areas for you to build on. Maybe you're so happy because you've found a particular part of your career you're really, really enjoying and you can build on. So I don't know if it's a danger as such, but I think it's just, I guess you probably could slip out of these habits. You could maybe slip out of, you know, being aware of your mental health and looking at your mental health when you feel great. And then it's just when things get worse that you think, oh, I better pick up all those habits again. So I think it's just making sure you maintain balance, however you're feeling, good or not so good.
So before I start using the therapy service that we provide in our business, Jack had started using it first, and one of the things that I said to Jack was, I don't think I need it because I feel fine. And then in the end, I did decide to start using it. But why? I'm sure that's a thought that a lot of people have. Why is that the wrong thought?
So I've had, I can't think how many times, but I've been through coaching and therapy a few times. Probably, I reckon I've had three coaches and three therapists over the last 8 years or so. So about six kind of six periods of working with a professional. One of those periods was when I was in crisis, so when I was really, really struggling. The other five have been when I've been, basically I've gone to grow, to learn, to grow and to learn and to develop myself. So that, you know, to what we were just speaking to, people tend to wait till things get really, really bad, then they go and seek out some sort of painkiller, whichever it is. People don't think about working on themselves proactively when things are really good, because they think everything's really good, right? But there is a space in, whether it's in coaching or therapy or with another, you know, type of professional service, to always be working on yourself. And, you know, not that you have to, you know, not that you have to be in therapy all the time, going every single week. Like, I've always used mine in blocks. So there'll be a certain thing that might come up in my life that I decide I want to work on or improve at or get better at, and I'll go for kind of a short, sharp burst until I feel like I've got to the point I want to be at. Take a break. So I'm not really in therapy at the moment. I see a coach once every couple of months. But I think there are always areas in your life you can work on and improve and build on. And it really comes back to that self-awareness piece. Like, I finished up with a therapist about 6 months ago, I think. And again, I wasn't in crisis point, but I was noticing I was having triggers to a certain situation. It wasn't leading me to like a wasn't like a crisis, but I noticed these triggers coming up, and I thought, you know what, I want to work on that. So I went with a therapist, and you know, when we got into it, obviously you end up back in your childhood and parents and school and all the rest of it. But I think it was 6 months, worked through it. I haven't had any of that since, because, you know, it might come up a little bit, but I've been able to manage it. So I think there's always room for self-improvement and self-development and growth. And I think one of the most powerful ways you can do that is with a professional who is trained, who will listen to you without judgment and without bias. It's not your manager or your colleague or a friend or, you know, family member who will always be bringing in a certain level of bias and judgment. I am slightly biased here because we're a coaching provider, but I think I've just seen firsthand the power of, yes, using these professional services when I was really, really struggling, but also using it to grow. And I'm 100%, well, in my opinion, a different and better person because I've gone through that coaching and that therapy at times when I want it to grow.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's so interesting, because and this is where we come back to self-awareness, and you could talk about the few subjects all day, but if you can notice those triggers, and you can, like you said, you don't just react to it. You're there already, and because the worst thing that could happen, if you can notice these triggers, okay, there's these triggers, but I'm dealing with them. But then trigger stacking will occur, and then all of a sudden, you don't know where you're going to end up. So, with the work that you do with Sanctus, for people that are listening, I'm looking at you as a bit of a doctor, George. So for the people that are listening and they might have the problems and the different problems or different things going on, at what point does somebody need a therapist and somebody need a coach? Like, what are the symptoms that they might be facing, yep, and should they have both?
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess just a caveat, like I'm definitely not a doctor or like a trained medical professional.
You
so
sound like,
please,
like one, George.
Yeah, well, I'll take it. But yeah, like I think if anyone is listening, like please, you know, you do feel like you need support, like please do seek professional like guidance first. But yeah, it's a good question, and I think we've had this a lot. Like we're a coaching business. We don't currently have work with therapists, so people often ask a lot, well, when do I go to which? And I think if I had to separate them, and this is kind of generalizing a bit, but generally speaking, coaching is about looking ahead. It's about looking where you want to get to and helping you get there, whereas therapy generally is looking backwards into, you know, your past or whatever events have led you up to the way you're feeling and working through that. It's not, those lines have been blurred a lot more in recent years. Like, I don't know if you've heard of CBT, the type of, mm-hmm, yeah, type of therapy which has exploded. That is a lot more about working with yourself today and where you want to get to. So really, there's not a huge range of difference between coaching and therapy anymore. I think the one thing I would say is generally therapists are more trained and more skilled to work with real, like, clinical mental health issues. So depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, things like that. Generally speaking, you will need to go and speak to a therapist. Other than that, there's not a huge difference between the two. I think it just depends what kind of work are you looking to do. So I think, and it's tough because, you know, I know this now, having been through coaching and therapy, so it's really, really easy for me, but I appreciate, you know, for someone that's maybe not sure, it can be confusing. So I think coming back to my first definition, that's generally how I look at the two when I know which route I want to go down. If I want to look at something that's more practical, more forward-looking, probably not delving into my past too much, I'll generally go to coaching. Whereas when I went to therapy recently, I knew there was certain triggers coming up. I knew we needed to get into the sticky part of childhood and family and all the rest of it. So I knew that going down the therapy route was better for me. But you know, I think really, when it really comes down to it, as I said, there's a lot of similarity. So when it really comes down to it, it's just about finding someone that is trained and qualified, that you gel with and, you know, feel that you understands you and gets you to the point where you are comfortable opening up with them and they can help you get to the place you want to get to, whichever, you know, whatever that might be. I think I used to say kind of make you the best version of yourself, but I think it puts this sort of pressure on the space. I think it's just about getting you to the place you want to get to. So if that's the coaching route, if that's the therapy route, if it's both at the same time, you absolutely can do both at the same time. It doesn't really matter. It's just about finding that person that you can really, really gel with. I think, yeah, the only caveat is if you really, really are struggling, I think then probably going down the therapy route makes more sense. And again, I know you asked about symptoms. It's a difficult one because it you know, mental health is so complex and nuanced, and what could be one symptom of one thing, like what could be me thinking I'm feeling anxiety could actually just be imposterism showing up and I could work through that with a coach, or it could be actually a more generalized anxiety disorder which perhaps I want to work through with a therapist. So I think I always say just, you know, start by talking to a mental health professional, your GP. And I think what I did when I was really struggling is I booked in a few calls with therapists I'd found online. I liked the way, you know, I liked their bios, and I booked on a few calls. They'll often do some sort of free, like, you know, taster session, so I could quickly explain what was going on for me. I could get a feel for that person, and then you can get a few different opinions, and that helped me to form an opinion. I think I spoke to about 6 therapists on the phone before I found one I wanted to work with. So I think I'd always just say, yeah, have that conversation with a few people who are, you know, trained and qualified, and from there you should get an idea of the best next step to take.
I think that's great advice, because especially like shopping around with therapists, because a lot of the time you if you have a therapist, it might be right. I remember we use BetterHelp, and obviously we kind of use that and we offer it to the team to make sure that they're kind of balancing between that rejection and validation. And when I spoke to them, maybe I didn't need a therapist. Maybe it was more so having this conversation now is quite eye-opening, because maybe I needed more of a coach saying, I just want to kind of be the best me I can be, and there's nothing that's broken, but I want to make sure that if I am running every day, my muscles are strong and repairing and things like that. So preventative. And the first coach that I had on BetterHelp just kept asking me, okay, and why do you feel anxious? And I was saying, No, I don't feel anxious. I'm okay. Okay, and what's making you, when did you first, I said, you're starting to make me feel anxious now, yeah, just based on this conversation. One session with them, it was like, right, try someone else, found someone new, and it was like, cool, well, where do you want to get to? With the coaching world, you'll probably know this better than anybody, but like, it's so interesting with the imposter syndrome and stuff like that, because there's stuff that you could be coached on. But do you think you're in a position to be coached if you haven't healed the back end? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And yes, I think you can. It just depends what level you want to get to. So, for example, when I was really, really struggling, I ended up going down the CBT route, which it really worked for me at the time. So, for people that don't know, it's cognitive behavioral therapy. So it's essentially about working with the ways that you think and your behavior, and you work on those things and change those things in order to change how you feel, like in a nutshell, basically. So CBT isn't really very past looking. It doesn't really, I think I had one session where we just went through my history, and then after that, it was very much just looking ahead, where do you want to get to, da 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 da. So that was the main therapy I had, basically, changing the way that I, you know, think and act in order to change how I feel. And it was good for me, and it got me better, and it was what I needed. And yet the things that had happened to me in the past that led to me getting to the point of feeling suicidal, I hadn't worked on or through. So CBT was what I needed then. But actually, those things back then, and those triggers, and you know, the stories I tell myself, and all this kind of stuff, that was still there, and I'd never really unpacked it. So, you know, lo and behold, when I'm having similar triggers, you know, recently this year or last year, I knew that there was, you know, some unpacking and some work I hadn't done there. So then I went to the therapist I went to see recently. We went deep then. Basically, we went into the stuff that I never talked about back then, eight, 9 years ago. So I definitely think you can, yes. It depends, because it depends how ready you are as well. I don't know if I was ready to do that kind of like deep sea diving eight years ago. I think I was sort of keeping it more service level. So it depends what you're trying to achieve, what you're trying to get to, where you're trying to get to, and how ready you are to do it. There are, again, you know, as with a lot of mental health stuff, there's always a lot of caveats. There is obviously caveats that if someone is in a really, really difficult place and they're really struggling with their mental health, then yes, probably, you know, trying to just do coaching and just looking ahead might not be right for them. They might need to do some of the harder, tougher work first, which, you know, again, it can feel like a frustrating answer to always come back to say, you know, speak to a professional and get an idea. But I think that is often the way, because it is, you know, my experience that I've shared here is obviously very personalised to me, and there's a lot of nuance to it. But basically, yes, you don't have to go through a linear path of, you know, let's talk about my childhood for 6 years and my parents, and then I can do all the fun positive stuff. You can absolutely move in and out and at your different pace.
Thanks for being so open about all this, George. It's a vulnerable conversation as well. So yeah, we really appreciate it.
Cheers, sir.
If we could, I suppose, zoom out a little bit, we haven't done that yet. So if we can zoom out and look at it from maybe like a company perspective, there's a lot of talk around culture, what makes a good culture, what makes an inclusive culture, safe, whatever it may be. But in terms of businesses who are hiring people who are in probably high pressure environments or vulnerable environments or environments with like a safeguarding element to them, how can they encourage a culture that's looking at well-being as like a top priority in their business?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I really, there's so many, you want to kind of build this from top down and bottom up. So I think it can be easy to look at just bringing in a service, or we'll just bring in like a sort of mental health platform, or maybe we'll just bring in a couple of therapists or a coach, and then that's job done. But obviously there's a wider cultural element that has to be done as well. And you have to make a workplace that there's a genuine commitment to mental health and well-being, and there's psychological safety, and people feel that when they step into that room with the therapist or the coach, or they use a digital platform, when they come back into the office, they know that their CEO or leaders or managers genuinely do care about this stuff, and they know they can take risks with their work without obviously within reason, without suffering loads of consequences, and they can speak up, and there's a culture of honesty and transparency. So there is a real kind of cultural piece to it. I would say, obviously, like practical steps, I would say businesses that start trying to imbue a bit of a coaching culture in their business. So you might have seen, I don't know if people have seen it, but there's like a different ways you can manage. There's obviously like the traditional, like let's just focus on performance, and there's a more sort of coaching element to it. So I think the more like managers and leaders are trained to, I think almost like coach their teams, coach their employees, not just work on the performance side, but are able to work with that whole individual and understand and recognize different working styles and people's well-being, and that whole entire person is brought into the conversation, that's a really good place to start. I think we've obviously talked already about making sure you bring in some of that humanness. So make sure people don't just feel like a number or a statistic, but there is room for the real human behind that. I think you want to encourage well-being conversations in one-to-ones. So obviously the coaching culture element we've already touched on, but really make that part of one-to-ones. So traditionally one-to-ones are, are you tracking against your targets, or are you OKRs? How's the performance? But make sure you bring in some of that, that human part too. I think, the thing I'm seeing at the moment, probably the biggest thing is with leaders and managers. So everything obviously all flows through management and leaders. They're kind of the linchpin of businesses, right? So I think equipping managers to be able to lead with a level of confidence and care is probably one of the number one priorities for businesses at the moment. Rather than, like I said, just bringing in a service that when people step back out, actually they've still got a manager who doesn't kind of treat them right, or know how to grow them, or work with their their individual goals and aims and purpose. So I think really if they're looking to do one thing over the next year, start with your managers, focus on your managers, equip them to be able to lead with this confidence and care, to kind of bring about a sense of coaching culture, to get more comfortable having well-being conversations. I think that is a great first step, rather than maybe jumping to just what solutions or services you can bring in. Start to build those foundations, build up that culture of trust and psychological safety. Then when you do bring in services, it layers on top of that really nicely. Because I think if you do it the other way around, people won't use the services, or they do, and it doesn't have the sort of lasting impact that people need from them, really.
And are there industries and maybe personas within those industries who tend to be more reluctant to look at this because they don't see it as there's going to be like a performance benefit to it? Have you found anything from your, being the marketeer?
Yep.
From the data that actually construction or whatever it may be is actually stuck in its ways?
Absolutely. I think when we first started, so we started about 7 years ago, I think 6-7 years ago, people weren't talking about this, right? Like mental health in the workplace wasn't really a thing. So we pretty much, not entirely, but pretty much exclusively worked with London tech startups. They were new and young and cool, and mental health was cool, and let's bring it in. So that was kind of where it started. That has changed. That has definitely changed in the time that I've been in the industry. and a lot more corporates and traditional industries are on board now, and they've, you know, whether that's because they really, really get it, just you know, just get it like straight away, or actually the links that have been made in recent years to performance and productivity and the bottom line have brought them round, which is fine, like whatever way people need to be brought into the conversation. But I think there are, yes, there are industries still where I think they're lagging behind. And that's fine. Like, everyone goes at their own pace. But yeah, we are definitely seeing that is the case.
George, a refreshingly honest conversation. It's been incredible. And it sounds like you could be a fully fledged member of We Have a Meeting, because you kind of preach what we practice as well. There's probably so many answers you could give to this next question, but if you had to choose the one piece of advice to anybody in maybe a sales role, what would you do to make sure that you're proactively looking after your mental health?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would come back to the self-awareness piece. I think that is where I would start, because it is something that is within your control. You're able to do it. It's free. You don't have to go out straight away and, you know, find someone else that you gel with to help you work on it, or you know, it's within your control immediately. As you said, it's not easy. You're not going to listen to this podcast and suddenly come off and you're super zen and self-aware and all that kind of stuff. It takes time, it takes practice. But I think the more you can start to understand yourself and the way that you think and the way that you work and the way that you talk to yourself, like if you struggle with, for example, if you struggle with imposterism, or, you know, imposter syndrome, as some people call it as well, there's like four or five archetypes of how that can show up. So if you can start to understand, oh yeah, that's my archetype, or that's the way I talk to myself, and I talk to myself because of this thing that's happened to me when I was younger, or I think the more you can start to build up that picture, the easier it will become to deal with more challenging situations. I'm not going to say that you'll never have them, or they're fixed, or you just breeze through them, because of course you don't, and you know they will and can still be challenging, but it just gives you a level of groundedness and awareness, and I think maturity to be able to tackle the things that will get thrown at you, whether that's through sales or another job or just your life, and be able to start to work through them in a way that's not just you just jumping immediately to, I'm not good enough, or I don't belong here, or I'm crap, or I was never meant to do this, but it allows you to start unpacking these things, get a real sense of, yeah, I think what you're good at, what you're really strong with, and then the areas maybe that are, you know, you get in the way of yourself, or you don't talk to yourself in the right way, your triggers, and then you can start to work through them, work on them and work through them to get to the place you want to be and be the person you want to be. And it's, yeah, I think that's been my biggest lesson really over the last 7 or 8 years, is, you know, I've had things happen in my life since I had the crisis, and I've had struggles and setbacks and rejections, but I think the way that I am able, the way I talk to myself now in those situations is so much nicer than it used to be. It's so much nicer, and it's easier for me to work through this stuff because I'm able to take a step back and be like, right, I understand that, you know, I'm reacting in this way because of this, and then I can take the right action, whether that is just, you know, a weekend just switching off, or it's having a conversation with a manager, or actually it's, you know what, maybe I should seek more long-term professional help. But I think that's what I'd say. And, you know, that could be frustrating advice for some people, because I think sometimes people just want to hear, no, just tell me if I go for like an hour run that everything's going to be okay. But I do genuinely believe that, self-awareness is an absolute superpower and just one of the most powerful tools any human on the planet can have in their arsenal when they're getting through this messy, muddy thing we call life.
Incredible, George. Thank you so much. For anybody that's listening that wants to follow you on LinkedIn, because you post some great stuff, or check out Sanctus, where can they find you both?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, George Bell, or Sanctus, we're sanctus.io.
Amazing. Well, thank you. I knew it would be a very positive, inspirational chat, and thank you so much for your honesty. Thank you, George.
Thanks for having me,
Jack. Appreciate it.